Good evening, everyone. This week's Parsha is Parsha Shlach, Tavshanai and Tess. Our videographer is away, so there's only an audio recording of the class. Okay, we will start on page 798, and we will go to Pasuk Tess Zion, which is Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Tess Zion, chapter 13, verse 16. So after the Torah lists all the spies, the Pasuk reads, Elo Shmoisu Anoshim, these are the names of the people, Asher Sholach Moshe L'Asur Es Ha'aretz, the Moshe sent to spy out the land, Vayikra Moshe L'Hoshea Ben-Nun Yehoshua, and Moshe called Hoshea Ben-Nun Yehoshua, who we know as Yehoshua. His original name was Hoshea, and here Moshe added the letter Yud to his name. And Rashi tells us that the reason why Moshe added the letter Yud to Moshe, to Yehoshua's name, to Hoshea's name, is because the letter Yud represents Hashem's name. And the letter Yud was to say, Ka Hoshea, God should save. God should save you from the plan, from the counsel of the spies. Moshe knew there was trouble brewing, and he prayed on behalf of his student that he should not get caught up. Now, we assume that Moshe Davin on behalf of Yehoshua because it was his student. The Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel says something else. Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel says, Uchdi Chama Moshan v'sanusei, when Moshe saw Hoshea's humility, Kara Moshe l'Hoshea bar Nun Yehoshua. Moshe called Hoshea bar Nun Yehoshua. Which means, according to Targum Yonasan, the reason why Moshe added Hashem's name as a prayer that Hoshea should be saved from the spies was because of Hoshea's humility. When Moshe saw the humility of Hoshea, that now gave him concern that somehow or another that humility would not allow him to stand up to his other fellow spies, and therefore he added the name of Hashem to his name. He prayed that Hoshea should be saved, and that his humility should not get the best of him. Now, what that seems to mean is that if Yehoshua was very humble, then he would kind of think that, who is he to stand up to the other spies? I mean, don't forget, these people were not simple people. They were great people. And therefore, Hoshea, in his humility, would think, who am I to go ahead and argue with them? And therefore, in order to correct that, in order to counter that, Moshe prayed for Hoshea by adding the letter Yud, and now his name was Yehoshua. So it's very clear from here that there's a correct form of humility and an incorrect form of humility. There's a type of humility that if the humility makes you consider yourself unworthy or unqualified, when you really are, that's the wrong type of humility.
And Moshe spoke of humility.
Now, correct. Now, let's discuss the trait of humility of Anivas and get a better understanding of the correct form and the incorrect form. And as many, many commentaries point out, that we think humility is, oh, I'm nothing, I can't do anything, I'm not worthy of anything, I don't deserve anything. Well, so Anivas, the commentary say, is not that. It's not that I can't do anything. On the contrary, a person is obligated to recognize the strength and the talents that Hashem has given him and utilize them in the service of Hashem. But what humility says is that you recognize that everything that you have is a gift from Hashem in order to serve him. And you don't credit yourself for them. You don't credit yourself. Understanding your value is an obligation. Aggrandizing yourself, making a fuss over your physical self, is forbidden. That's the difference. You're allowed to realize that you have value. But when you say you have value, what is that value? Is it your physical value? Is it your status? Is it your strength? Is it your looks? If that's what it is, if that's how you, is it your honor, your status? If that is how you value yourself, then that's making a fuss over yourself, making aggrandizing yourself, your physical self, and that's not correct. The humble person understands is that there is no value in the physical self for its own sake, and therefore he thus devalues status and honor. But if you want to recognize who you are, you're obligated to recognize who you are and what you can do. But if you start making too much of a fuss over yourself because of it, that's where the problem comes in. And the person who is humble sees others as greater than himself. He will typically look at others as greater than himself so that he doesn't slip into any level of feeling haughty over others. And this is expressed very beautifully in what's called the Igeres HaRamban. Ramban Nachmanides wrote a letter to his son, and he wanted his son to read it very often. And the primary focus of this letter of the Ramban, the famous letter of the Ramban, is humility. And in one of the sections, the Ramban says that how does one behave in a humble manner? How does humility manifest itself? So the answer is, every person should be greater than you. If he's wise or wealthy, you're obligated to honor him. If Hashem gave him those things, then you should recognize those things. Let's say he's poor. Let's say you're wealthier than him, you're wiser than him, and therefore these aspects are not things that you could, so to speak, respect him for. You know what you should think? You should think that you are less, that you are more, you're not as, you're ato chayev mimenu, v'huzaka mimcha. Right. He is more innocent than you. You are more guilty, he is more innocent. She'im hu chaytei, that if he sins, hu shaygek, he's doing it intentional. V'ato meizu, but you're intentional. Meaning, if you see a person, you always have to find a way that you see someone else is greater than you. You could look at what he's accomplished. There's many ways of doing it. You could look at what he has, certain things, certain characteristics that Hashem has blessed him with. Or the idea is his behavior, even if it's lacking, and your behavior seems to be on a higher level, but he's innocent. He doesn't know any better. You know what you're doing. You still do it. Either way, there's the humble person is always finding a way to be able to see others as greater than himself. And by doing that, he doesn't become haughty over others. He doesn't think of himself as better than others. But it's possible that you can overdo that. It's possible that you can come to a point when you're seeing yourself as lower than others, you can overdo it. And you can decide that, as Moshe was concerned about Yoshua, that because he was such a humble person, he may say, who am I to stand up to these great people? In a sense where he is seeing others as greater than him, he's overdoing it because he's doing it in a way that he's saying, well, I can't argue with them. I can't stand up against them. And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want that from Yoshua. Yoshua had to be able to stand up against them and not allow the way he humbled himself to overdo that humility. Therefore, in case he sees himself as unworthy, disagree with his colleagues, because he was so humble, Moshe davened on his behalf that he should have that strength to stand up against them.
Ramban doesn't mention it. I think in our times it's hard to imagine that you can overdo humility.
Oh, there's still people.
So Ramban, because...
Ramban didn't discuss that. Ramban's not discussing that. Ramban is saying... Yeah, but Ramban's not saying the opposite of that. Ramban's saying, what is the general form of humility? But the Ramban is not saying that you should do it in a way that because of that you shirk your responsibilities. Right. That was the whole point.
There's no warning. Oh, don't be.
No, you're right. He doesn't warn that. But at the same time, I don't know if he's going the opposite of that, because if that's the essence of what humility is, then there's no reason. Then there's never a reason not to do what you're supposed to do out of humility. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Moshe was concerned for Yoshua that he may, so to speak, overdo it. And therefore, he said he davened on his behalf.
What made Caleb so special?
He had his own strength. He had his own strength. We'll talk about that soon. Now, just to speak about this idea more. So in last week's parsha, Parshas Baloischa, Moshe Rabbeinu asks Hashem for help. He can't carry the load of the Jewish people on his own. He needs help. So what does Hashem say to him? He says to him, Esfali shivim ish mezikne Yisrael. Gather unto me 70 men from the elders of Israel. And what's interesting is that the wording is shivim ish. 70, literally man, right? Ish is a singular form. It would be more correct to say anashim, men. Now, we do find the word ish, which is singular form, to be used in the plural form too, but when that happens, you want to explain why. So the Medrash points out the fact that it says ish and not anoshim. And the Medrash in the Medrash, last week's parasha, says, lo amaloi amaloi esfal shivim anoshim. Why didn't Hashem say to Moshe, gather unto me 70 men? The answer is miyuchadin. These men have to be special. Shiudoimin li valach. I want these men to be similar to me, says God, and similar to you, Moshe. In what way? In the word ish. The word Ish, we find the word Ish by Moshe, find the word Ish by Hashem, and it's those traits that I want those leaders to have. Hashem Ish Melchama, which we say every day in Az Yashar, Hashem is the man of war. Moshe, we find the word Ish by Moshe, Va'ish Moshe Anav Ma'id, and the man Moshe was very humble. So the word Ish is being used to allude to what the word Ish that we find by Hashem and Moshe, characteristics that the word Ish is connected to. We find Hashem Ish Melchama, and Moshe is Ish Anav. What is exactly the point here? So the point here is, as Rabbi Franz brings from Rabbi Shlomo Breuner Zatzal, that a leader has to have, there has to be a duality in the role of a leader. A Jewish leader, no matter how powerful he is, has to be humble. He has to be willing to help each and every person. David HaMelech, who was the king of Klal Yisrael, of Klal Yisrael, David HaMelech talked about if somebody needed him, even if it meant checking a woman's blood to see if she was in need or not, he checked it. Nothing was beneath him when it came to taking care of a fellow Jew. A Jewish leader, no matter how powerful they are, have to always be ready, have to always be humble, never to abuse their power, never to use their power in the wrong way, and to always be humble and helpful to everyone.
What? Yitro's advice, right?
Okay. But at the same time, a leader also has to be an Ish Melchama. It's got to be a person of war. If he has to stand up and rebuke the people, and even have to fight with the people to wage war against those that wage war against Hashem, he has to do that. And the humility is not supposed to creep in there. Humility shouldn't say, oh, how can I do this? Who am I to do this? The humble person understands everything has in the service of Hashem, and therefore, when it comes to serving Hashem, there's nothing to stop. There's nothing to stop. The Chafetz Chaim was a very humble person. Chafetz Chaim always wondered why anywhere he went, throngs of people came to greet him. People asked him for brachas. He couldn't understand it. But he came to those places for a reason. That any time something had to be said, he was there to say it. So therefore, the duality of a Jewish leader comes out in this medrash, that Hashem tells Moshe that the leaders that you appoint have to have the characteristics of Ish that you find by me, says Hashem, and by you. You have to have the characteristic of Ish by you, which is anav, anivus, humility. Excuse me. But at the same time, has to have the characteristic of Ish, the Ish Melchama of Hashem, to stand up and do what he has to do. That's exactly the point that Moshe wanted to make sure happened by Yehoshua, that his humility should not in any way be overdone or get in the way of him standing up to be an Ish Melchama, to stand up for what was right. We find this problem in Tanakh, in Sefer Shmuel. When Shmuel told Shaul to destroy Amalek, and Shaul came back to Shmuel. Hashem told Shmuel, I'm very upset with Shaul. And Shmuel went out to greet Shaul. And Shmuel said to Shaul, Haloi im katan ata beinecha, even if you're small in your own eyes, Reish shifta Yisrael ata, you're the head of the tribe of Israel. You know, Shaul was a very, very humble person. When Shaul was supposed to be anointed as king, he was hiding. But at the same time, right? Okay, he was a very humble person, no question about it. Even though he was described as Shechem Mamala, from shouldering up, he's higher than everyone, which means in a spiritual sense, he was a very humble person. Shmuel said to him, you may be very humble, in your own eyes you may be very small, but you're the head of the tribes of Israel. You've got to stand up, you've got to make sure to do the right thing. That was an example of where such a thing happened. Now I'm going to share with you a very interesting Chassidus Shepshat in a Mishnah Pirkei Avos. It's very nice. It's very cute. It's very nice. Respectful. Very nice. Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Chamisha, this is the second perek, Mishnah Yud and Yud Aleph. Chamisha Talmidim Hayu Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The sage Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five students. Ve'elu hein, these are they. Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, Rabbi Yosei HaKoyin, Rabbi Shimon ben Nesano, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. Those were his five students. And then the Mishnah, next Mishnah says, Hu Yamayna Shivchan. He used to enumerate their praises. He went and enumerated each one's the special quality that each one has. So Rabbi Avram Tversky, in his book on Pirkei Avos, brings from the Radomska Rebbe the following. First of all, it says he had five Talmidim. Really? He only had five Talmidim? He had a lot more than five Talmidim. So to answer that, Kasha, we would say, well, these must have been his primary Talmidim. All right, perhaps. But also, what is this point of Maina Shivchan? What's the point of enumerating their praises? What's the point of it? So the Radomsky Rebbe answered like this. He answered that Rechem and Zakkai had more than five Talmidim. But these five Talmidim were so modest, they were so self-effacing, that he was afraid that they were going to be too modest. And therefore, he felt it necessary to be Mayna Shivchan. He had to go ahead and enumerate their praises, pointing out to each one of them, you have this trait. You have to make sure to use that trait. Hashem has given you that trait. You got to recognize it, and you have to use it. And he brings a very interesting, he doesn't say who this is from, but he brings the following quote. He says, if a person is unaware of his defects, then he does not know what he must correct. However, it is far worse if he doesn't know his strengths, for then he cannot utilize the abilities he has to perfect himself. So the Radomsky Rebbe said that in this situation, the problem was these five Talmidim were so self-effacing that the Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai was afraid that they weren't going to utilize the qualities that they had. Therefore, he had to enumerate their praises and focus them and stress to them, these are your special talents and abilities. You've got to make sure to use it. Right? Now, last thing I want to mention about this is the following. It's a very interesting thought from Rabbi Avraham Chaim Feuer in his writing on the Igeres HaRamban. And he brings the following. We know that Moshe, as it says, Va'ish Moshe anav ma'id mikala adam ashra p'nei adama. Moshe was the humblest of all people on earth. Okay? So he writes out that it cannot mean that Moshe thought he was insignificant. Can't be. When you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you've done so much, you can't say you're insignificant. Okay? So, how does Moshe become humble? So he brings a thought from the Talzer Rav, Rebbe Yosef Leib Lach. Now, before I tell you the thought that he brings down from him, you know, I would say that based on what we just said right now, there's not difficult to understand. Moshe Rabbeinu knows he's not insignificant, but he's honored, he's humble. He's humble. He recognizes everything comes from Hashem. He realizes he's not crediting himself. He's not making a fuss over himself. Even though he surely could have, but he didn't recognize everything comes from Hashem, and that's why he's out of Mikol Adam. But he brings a very interesting thought from Rabbi Yosef Leib Lach, the Talzer Rav. And I think it adds a lot to what we've been saying. Because it really explains, you know, what made Moshe un of Mikol Adam? What made him the humblest? Okay, he's humble. Made him the humblest. So the way the Talzer Rav said it was the following. Typically, humility or arrogance is really dependent on what you measure yourself up against. So if you're 7 feet tall and you measure yourself against someone who's 5 feet tall, then you're taller. You're bigger. You're bigger, right? You have what to think of yourself as higher than the other person. If you stand next to the Empire State Building, right, you're going to feel very, very small. It all depends what you measure yourself up to. An arrogant person typically is measuring himself up against another person, and he sees the other person as lower. When there's a person who there is no denying that they're bigger, right, then there's nothing to be arrogant about. You're not going to find anything to be arrogant about. The more a person is aware of Hashem's presence, the more a person lives with Hashem's presence, it's very hard. You can't be arrogant, because the more you're in Hashem's presence, you have to automatically measure yourself up against Hashem, and in that sense, you're nothing. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest prophet. He lived with Hashem. He was aware of Hashem's existence and greatness more than anybody else ever. And that's exactly what made him the most humble. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was measuring himself up against Hashem in the most intense way more than anybody else ever did. Because only Moshe had the greatest connection, experience, understanding of Hashem's presence. So therefore, he's the humblest because he understands Hashem's greatness more than everyone else. And he understands he feels the presence of Hashem more than anybody else. And therefore, he automatically measures himself up against Hashem.
So you're saying this experience made him naturally.
Right? The fact of what he is, he's always measuring himself up against Hashem. Okay? Therefore, he's the humblest of all people. So again, humility says you recognize everything comes from Hashem. You don't credit yourself. And the more you stand in the presence of Hashem, the more you measure yourself up against Hashem's greatness, and that humbles you. At the same time, we can also say, excuse me, I have to apologize for my voice. We could also say that if there's anybody who understood how everything comes from Hashem, and that it's nothing from us, that's Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, having the experience of Hashem that Moshe Rabbeinu has, Moshe Rabbeinu understands on the highest level, in the deepest, deepest sense, how everything that we have is Hashem. And therefore, again, it's not about him. There's nothing about him. There's no credit to him. There's nothing about him. There's no fuss about himself. It's all the Ribbono Shel Olam. Everything comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. He understood that more than anyone else because he was the greatest prophet and understood Hashem's presence more than anything else. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is the most humble because of the fact that he's the greatest prophet. Because he did all these great things as the greatest prophet, he understands who he is, but he has such a keen sense of the Ribbono Shel Olam that therefore he is the humblest. Okay, and that is the idea here of Moshe Rabbeinu davening on behalf of Yeshua to make sure that his humility did not hinder him from doing the right thing.
You're seeing people should try to hang out people go higher than them.
Okay, usually, that'll help.
Usually disappointed help. When you get to know somebody too well.
Okay.
Very few people.
Let's now turn to page 806, and this is where we're going to talk about Kalev. So after the spies caused the Jewish people to lose their faith in Hashem, and to cry and to complain, so the Ribbono Shel Olam was about to, destroy the Jewish people, Moshe davens on their behalf and saved them. But Hashem says that this generation will never enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. Now, on page 806, Perek Yudalad, Pasuk Chav Dalad, chapter 14, verse 24, Va'avdi Kalev, and my servant Kalev, Ekev Hayasaruach Acheres Imai, because there was a different spirit with him, Vayamale Acharai, and he followed me wholeheartedly, Vavi'oisiv Elo Ares Hashem Hashama, I will bring him to the land in which he came to, Zaroya Rishena, and his children shall inherit it. So because Kalev, we know Kalev, Kalev stood up and actually was the one who spoke out against the spies, Hashem says that because of that, I will bring him to the land in which he came. The land in which he came is the land of Hebron, because it was Hebron where we know that with Kalev, actually left the rest of the spies. He went to Hebron, went to Maras HaMachpelah, where Avgrisak and Yaakov were buried, and he prayed there that he be saved from the plan of the spies. So where he went to, Hashem says, that is what he's going to inherit. That's going to be given to him and his family. Now, what does it mean? This word, Ruach Acheres, had a different spirit. It's been a different spirit. So Rashi explains, if you look in Rashi, Ruach Acheres, it's in the left column, Pasuk Chaf Dalet. It's about 2, 4, 6 lines from the top of the column to the left. Ruach Acheres, a different spirit. Shtei Ruchos, a different spirit here really means he had two spirits. Achas Pepe v'Achas Palev. He showed himself in one way on the outside, but on the inside he was a different way. Limaraglim Amrani Machem Be'etza. To the Maraglim he said, I'm in it with you. But he always planned on telling the truth. That's why he had the power to quiet everyone down. As it says, Kalev quieted everyone. He thought that he was going to say like them. If you turn back to Pasuk, page 802, this is Pasuk Lamed. Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Lamed, after the spies have already given their negative report, It says, Vayas Kalev Esa'am El Moshe. Kalev quieted the people to Moshe. He got everybody's attention. And what did he say? Vayemer, and he said, Olei na lev yirashnu oisa, we can surely go up and take it. Kiyachalu chala, we are able to do it. So it seems that you got Kalev's ability to quiet everybody. Everybody turned to Kalev. Everybody's ready to listen to Kalev. Why? So the answer is, when the spies had already given their negative report, Kalev jumps up, they're ready to say, okay, Kalev has got it, he's gonna say something in our support. And instead, because he had everyone's attention, he was able to counter and to say, no, we can go up and get the land. But it's because at first he showed the other spies he was with them, but truthfully he never was, and his plan was always to tell the truth. So that's the Ruach HaCharis, that's the other spirit. He had more than one spirit. He showed himself in one way, but deep down he really was another way. So our Chaim explains this in a different way, a very interesting way. He also wants to know why in this pasuk, again, especially so we're talking about who is going to make it to the land. It's not just Kalev going to make it to the land, Yeshua is going to make it to the land also, as we know later on. So why is there no mention of Yeshua here? The our Chaim wants to know. And again, what is the meaning of Ruach HaCharis? So the our Chaim says like this. The our Chaim explains, let's just go through how the our Chaim reads the pasuk. Va'avdi Kalev, and my servant Kalev. You know why Kalev is called my servant? Not too many people Hashem calls my servant. Avdi Kalev, my servant Kalev. You know why he's called my servant? Ekev Hayesa Ruach HaCharis Imai. Because he had a different spirit. The different spirit means, says Dar HaChaim, is that he really was originally in cahoots with the spies. He had a different spirit. Meaning he had the spirit originally not like what I wanted. He originally was in it with the spies, and as the way that the Ar HaChaim says it, the Ar HaChaim says that Yoshua gam kolin yitzashem memeraglim afal pikein zehayu leisiba tefilas Moshe tzilasei meyetzar mikachaysav shememeraglim val yatu. Yoshua had the help of Moshe's prayer that he not fall prey to the seduction of the spies. Masha'ein ken Kalev. Kalev wasn't that way. No one davened for Kalev. Shenichnas begeder sakaras yetzahara v'chevra seharisha. He entered into this group of the yetzahara. Vatoch ruach ra lefamai. And the spirit of evil was already starting to beat within him. V'haraya, the proof being to the fact, shalach v'shateach l'kvuras avis. He went to daven by the avis's burial place. Yeshua didn't. But he did. Why? Because, says the Ar HaChaim, the Peshat is, because he knew he was in trouble. Because he knew that inside, he was influenced by the spies. V'hu amra ruach HaCharis ima. That's what the Pasuk means when it says he had a different spirit. He had a spirit different than what I want. V'afal pikein, nonetheless, v'yamale acharai. He followed me wholeheartedly. Pirish hishlim acharai tzayna yisbarach. He wholeheartedly followed Hashem's will. Every person we know has a Yetzara, Yetzar Tov. Every person has two advisors, two people always, two powers always ready to give advice, the Yetzara and the Yetzar Tov. And who did at the end? The Yetzar Tov was already had his in Kalev. But what did Kalev do? He overpowered it. He overcame it. And instead of listening to the Yetzara, he listened to the Yetzar Tov. And that's what it means. Therefore, why was he called Eved Hashem? He's called Eved Hashem because even though he had a Ruach HaCharis, even though the Yetzara had a grip on him, and there was everybody's already influencing him against what Hashem wanted, even so, Vayamale Acharai, he still overcame the Yetzara, he overcame the influences that were taking him over, and he fought it back, and he fulfilled what Hashem had said. Yeshua, he doesn't get into why he gave it to Yeshua. He gave it to Yeshua, and therefore, and this is an interesting idea, so I want to stress also, that the Ar HaChaim says, v'ze'ena b'Yeshua, what we're talking about by Kalev now, that Kalev overcame the Yetzara, he says that's not by Yeshua. Ki lo ha'yisa ruach ha'cheres imay lat oisim l'ar ha'seichel. There was no other spirit that was trying to entice him away from the proper path. Ki Moshe manai, Moshe stopped it. V'yesh koyach v'tfilas ha'tzadikim gam l'mechina zu. The tzadikim have a power in their prayer even to go this far. Beside, in following an idea of tzaddik meishal yiras elikim, a tzaddik rules over the fear of God. What the Aruch Chaim is saying is, and this is a very interesting discussion on its own, can I daven, every person has free will, right? Can I daven that your will should be changed? That the Aruch Chaim is saying that's what happened here. A tzaddik, at least he's saying, a tzaddik has the ability to go ahead and actually influence someone else's bechira. That's what he says. And that's what he says. And that is why Yehoshua didn't have a challenge here. Yeshua says the Aruch Chaim did not have a challenge. And therefore says the Aruch Chaim, the whole point of this pasuk is not about who's going to make it, who's not going to make it. It's about Ba'avdi Kalev. This is something special, unique about Kalev. Kalev is my servant. Why? Because he had a Ruach HaCheres, he had a different spirit, and still Vayimali Acharai, and he followed after me. And the Aruch Chaim concludes, Asher Alkein Zacha Kalev, therefore Kalev merited, Sheikarei Eved Hashem, that he should be called the servant of Hashem, K'moshe Rabbeinu Abba Shalom. He should be called an Eved of Hashem like Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem calls Moshe Avdi, Moshe my servant. That was in last week's parasha. And in this week's parasha, Kalev is called Avdi, my servant. Why was he called Avdi like Moshe? Because of this, because of what he did here. Because he had the Yetzer influencing him, and he fought it off.
I see the opposite here, that with severe limitation, Moshe can only influence his closest student.
That's a separate explanation. That's a separate explanation. That's one explanation. That's why he did it for Yeshua. That's why he did it for Yeshua. And whether it's only because it's Talmud, that's not what the Aruch Chaim says. The Aruch Chaim says a tzaddik has the ability to do it. Why did he do it here? Perhaps because it was his student. But that's what the Aruch Chaim says. So that's the power of a tzaddik. And okay, now, so just a quick question, which I don't really think such a big question, but it's a quick question that I heard. And that is that, okay, so we're saying Kalev had a test. Kalev had a temptation. He overcame it. Yeshua had no temptation. What about the fact that Kalev went to Davin in Maaseh Machpelah? Did that have anything? Did that help in any way?
It was his decision to go there.
Okay. So let's first start with the question, okay? One can ask a question. It's true that Moshe davened on behalf of Yeshua, but Kalev davened by Maaseh Machpelah. Maybe we should say that wasn't for, we should assume that didn't go for naught, right? And therefore he also had a strong dose of what we call Siyata D'Shemaya, divine presence not to sin. So then there would seemingly be the same. So Simcha saying, no, there's a big difference. Yeshua didn't do anything. Moshe did the praying for Yeshua. Kalev overcame his Yetzer Hara by going to Davin that he should be saved. So therefore, again, it's his action that saved him eventually from doing it. I would have answered differently. Your answer is a good answer, but I would have answered differently. I would have answered that when a tzaddik davens for you directly, right, it's the tzaddik davening for you, as the Aruch Chaim says. The tzaddik has the power to do this, right? Here, Kalev is the davening who's davening. Sure, he's davening Maaseh Machpelah, and sure, it helped him. But it didn't necessarily take away the challenge as much as Yeshua was unchallenged. That's how I would have answered it. But okay, either way works. Now, no, it's not. Okay, Asher. Now, one more thing I want to talk about this, and this is that line that I just told you from the Aruch Chaim. The last line he says on this thought, he says, "Asher al kein zacha kalev." Sheikarei Eved Hashem. Therefore, Kalev merited to be called the servant of Hashem, K'moshe Rabbeinu, as Moshe Rabbeinu was called Eved Hashem. Now, does that mean? Now, the Aruch Chaim just said that Kalev was called Eved Hashem because he overcame his Yetzer Hara. Are we saying that's why Moshe was called Eved Hashem because he overcame his Yetzer Hara? At the end of the day, right? It's not just the end result, right? The whole idea of being called Eved Hashem, says the Aruch Chaim by Kalev, was the struggle. He had to go through the struggle to come there, right? Not everybody is called Eved Hashem because at the end they don't sin, right? You have to have struggled, really struggled, right? And overcome it to be called an Eved. And that's what he's saying, at least by Kalev. Kalev is called my Eved because he overcame the struggle of the Yetzer Hara. are probably on a level that many people have never had to deal with. Okay? But now he's saying, and therefore he's called my Eved like Moshe. I mean, is it for the same reason? Is it how are we comparing them? After this whole idea that the Aruch Chaim is stressing, that he's called an Eved because he overcame his Eitz Hara on such a level. And now he can compare it to Moshe Rabbeinu. What's the comparison exactly? So it's possible. I'm not saying this is what the Aruch Chaim means, but it's possible to actually take this theme of Aruch Chaim and apply it to Moshe Rabbeinu. And I've said this before, but again, it comes up here because it's relevant. I'm not sure if you've ever heard it, but it goes like this. There is a Mishnah in Kedushin that says, Toiv Shabarayfim Legehenim, which literally means the good of doctors to Gehenna. Right? What does that mean? What do we got against doctors? The good, Toiv typically would mean the best of doctors to Gehenna. Yeah, what do doctors do so bad? So the commentary of Tiferes Yisrael explains the Mishnah in the this line in the Mishnah in the following way. And he says it's based on a very special Davar Nechmad that he heard, or that's written somewhere. I don't think he says exactly where it's from. But it says like this. When Moshe Rabbeinu took B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, as we say in Az Yashir, Shamu Ami Rigazin, nations heard and they trembled. Everybody knew about it. It wasn't a secret. They came out of Mitzrayim. It wasn't a secret that the Red Sea was split. And therefore, there were many who wanted to know, who is this Moshe Rabbeinu? I'd love to see this Moshe Rabbeinu. Who is he? Who is this Moshe? So it says that because of this, there was one Arab king, Melech Arabi Echad, one Arab king, who decided he wants to see Moshe. So he sent an artist, his best artist, to find the Jewish people in the desert and to draw a picture. Well, apparently he got into close enough view of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he drew a picture, and he brought it back to the king. All right, well, I got a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu. But the king didn't stop there. The king brought over his wise men. And there is something called Chachmas HaParitzif. There's a way of looking at, there are people who can look at people's face, facial figures, and tell you what kind of person they are. So he showed this picture to his wise men, and I guess he didn't necessarily tell them who it was. And he says, so tell me about this person. Who is this person? And they looked at the picture and they said, this guy, he's the worst of the worst. Any bad trait you can think of, he's got it. So he said, no, you got to be kidding. And he said, no, that's this guy. He's no good. He says, do you know who there's a picture of? Who's? This is Moshe. What? This is Moshe. You guys are off. You guys must be lying. And they said, oh, we're not lying. That artist, he did a bad job. Or he drew a picture of the wrong guy. So he calls in the artist. And the artist says, no, this is Moshe Rabbeinu. And they're all fighting with each other. Can't be. So the king decides, that's it. I'm going myself. I'm going to see Moshe Rabbeinu. So he traveled to the desert, and as a king, he was recognizable, he was a king, and he had an audience of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he took out the picture, and he looked, and said, yeah, that's him. This is it. You know, the artist was right, the wise men were wrong. So he tells Moshe Rabbeinu the whole story about the artist who came and the argument over his picture. And he says, when I get back home, those wise men, they're gonna pay for the way they acted. And that says Moshe Rabbeinu to them. Vayan Moshe l'kim vayoymar. Moshe, the man of God, responded. He said, Lo kein, not so. Gam atzayer, gam chachamecha nefloyim hem b'yasev v'chachmasem. They're both right. And they're both the best at what they do. Ulam dalacha. Nonetheless, no. Kiluli hayisi beteva beemes kvi shematim b'daisai. If I would truly just be the way you've heard of who I am, that's just the way I am naturally. Loitayv anachem ibul eitz yavesh. I'm not better than a stick, than a dry piece of wood. Kigam imenu nimnu v'nechshachu kol chasroides ha'adam. All human foibles don't have, sticks don't have either. V'imkein, if so, achiba vorzeh, eyeh, yokar v'inei elokim v'adam. You think because of that, that's because I would be considered important in Hashem's eyes? doesn't sound real humble, but it is humble.
Because it was
right. I'm not embarrassed to tell you. All the shortcomings that your wise men said about me, kulam kshurim b'teva. That's my nature. It may even be worse than what they saw. But with tremendous strength, I overcame all those negative traits. Until actually I was able to create a new nature within me. And that's how I got to where I am.
Humility and recognition of his strength.
Right, exactly. Humility, recognition of his strength. So basically, okay, so that's this medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu. This medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, I will tell you that there are people who have questions on this. One of the questions are that if Moshe Rabbeinu was as bad as he makes himself, it says that she saw that he was toiv, that he was good. And it said, Rashi rings down, the room became full of light. Gosh, if this kid is as bad as he makes himself when he gets older, doesn't seem like the kind of kid there would be this light radiating out of him. Unless you could say the light radiating was the potential. But okay, won't get at that right now. Says the Tveras Yisrael that this is Pshat and Toiv Shebereifim. Toiv Shebereifim, the Tveras Yisrael points out that there are other occupations that the Mishnah mentions that are also criticized, and he points out that the word by the doctor is not kosher shabarefim, which is used by a different occupation. Kosher would mean the best, the highest quality, the proper. It says toiv, the good, and therefore he says toiv shabarefim means the doctor who thinks he's the toiv, thinks he's the best. He is like Gehenim. He's saying towards Gehenim. Because the arrogant doctor is going to make mistakes. The arrogant doctor, who people's lives depend on him, cannot be arrogant. He must be humble. He must be willing to ask questions. He must be willing to take criticism. He must be able to research what he needs to know. If he's arrogant, he's just going to shoot from the hip, and he's going to kill people. And he points out the Tveras Yisrael that the wording is legehenim. He's heading towards Gehenim. He's not in Gehenim yet. Because he still can do what Moshe Rabbeinu did. He can overcome his bad traits and do what's right.
Towards he mentions doctors who don't want second opinions and discourage patients to go to him.
Okay. Okay.
What year was this from?
The Tveras Yisrael?
The story about Moshe Rabbeinu.
He brings it, I don't know what the source he has it from exactly. It's got to be some kind of medrash. Okay, so and so it could be that this is what Ar HaChaim is alluding to when he says that is why Kalev was called my servant, like Moshe is called my servant. It's the same idea. When you overcome the Yetzer on such a strong level, like the way Moshe and Kalev did, you're called Eved. And even if you don't come to the level of Kalev and Moshe Rabbeinu, it still means that any time you do overcome the struggle with the Yetzirah, that's when you're closer, you're touching that level of servant of Hashem. And if you think about it, you know, it's really not easy. If you're in the middle, if there's a temptation inside of you that's going strong, it's hard. It's a hard thing to overcome. It's a lot different when something's not bothering you and you don't get into it. But if something's already after you, you're being tempted by it, it's very difficult. And we should understand that Moshe Rabbeinu talks about himself like he really had a lot to work on just from the way he was naturally. Kalev, though, had this tremendous, tremendous pressure of the group that he was amongst to follow them, and he overcame it, and therefore, because of that, he merited to be called Avdi Hashem, my servant. Okay. Let's go back to something in the beginning of the Parsha before we run out of time. And we know that from the beginning of the parasha, Rashi brings down that when Hashem says to Moshe, "Shlach lecha anashim, send men, shlach lecha, send for yourself men," Rashi says that Hashem said to Moshe, "I already told the Jewish people it's a good land. You want to send spies? You go ahead and send spies, but it's not going to work out good at the end." So the obvious question is, why did Moshe do it then? So Yaakov Kamenetsky explains in the following way. He explains that there is a famous Ramban we mentioned before. I'm not going to get into it in length right now, but the Ramban of Parshas Bechukosai says that really people should not go to doctors. People should not go to doctors. People, rather, their actions will determine how Hashem treats their health. Our health depends on our actions, right? If we sin, Hashem punishes us. If we don't sin, we'll be okay. But this is what the Ramban says. Ramban says, essentially, this is how things health-wise should work. It's about the way you serve Hashem. If you're doing what's right, you're healthy. If you're doing what's wrong, you got to do tshuva. That's how he says. That's there, and therefore, essentially, people should not go to doctors. The commentaries explain that the Ramban is only saying this about a person who is on that level that actually can accept and truly believe that if I'm sick, you know, I'm sick, Hashem may be sick because I did something wrong. And the way I'll take care of it is by doing tshuva. If you truly leave in that level, in that belief, that your health is not about something kind, it's not dependent on natural factors, but it's really dependent on spiritual factors, on the way you serve Hashem, if that's where you should be. That's where you should be, and if that's where you should be, then you should be at a doctor. But if you're not there, you're not going to say, I'm not going to the doctor, because, you know, you're not supposed to go to the doctor. If you don't really believe that, if you're not really holding by that kind of idea, then you have to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. You have to engage in the natural ways of doing things if you are not at the level of actually believing that we're beyond, that our lives are beyond that. Based on that, Rabbi Akiva says the following. Yes, Hashem told the Jewish people, the land is good. You're going to have it. You're going to be able to take it. If they were able to actually believe that without engaging in the natural means of war, that they can take the land of Israel, they would not have needed to have engaged in the natural means of war. Or in the very least, sending spies. So Moshe Rabbeinu, so Hashem says, the land is good. Now, Moshe, your job is to now evaluate the Jewish people. See where they're holding. See if they can handle it. In the beginning of Devarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu rehashes the whole story of the spies, what does it say? Everybody came in a rush and a confusion. Everybody was nervous. Everybody was scared. Everybody was confused. You got to send spies. It's quite obvious to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jewish people were not holding at that level of being able to say that we don't need all this stuff. We're in the hands of Hashem. And therefore, at that point, they actually had to send the spies. So what you see here is that this concept of Yaakov Konetsky is bringing out from the Ramban is that depending on our level of how much faith and trust we have in Hashem, it according to the level of how much we truly believe and are cognizant that Hashem is running everything, if we're truly cognizant of that, then we really should not be getting involved in natural means. We should be putting our trust in Hashem. And now, again, we don't follow that alone. We don't consider ourselves in that level. But at the same time, the more you really do recognize and believe that everything's in the hands of Hashem, that really frees you up according to that level, according to how much you believe, you're really freed up from that level of hishtadlus, of having to engage in the natural means of getting things. Right? It all depends on what your level is of betachin. Depending on what your level of trust in Hashem is, that dictates how much effort you have, how much natural effort you have to put into it. The Shari Ayra points out that not only does your level of betachin, of trust in Hashem, make a difference in how much hishtadlus, how much natural effort you have to put into it, but how much betachin and trust, and how much emunah betachin, how much faith and trust in Hashem you have, makes a difference in how you'll be answered. And he brings this out from a famous Gemara in Baba Metzia. Baba Metzia says that Eliyahu HaNavi one time revealed to, I think it was to Rebbe, that it says, whatever this concept means, that Eliyahu HaNavi every day, wakes up Avraham Avinu and washes his hands. And then he wakes up Yitzchak and washes his hands. Then he wakes up Yaakov and washes his hands. The question was, why don't you do them all together? So the answer is, because if they get up all together and if they all daven together at once, Mashiach is going to come. That's why they can't all be up together. They'll be up together, they'll daven together, and then Mashiach is going to come no matter what. So Rabbi said, well, Eliyahu HaNavi, tell me, are there any people in this world who can accomplish the same thing? And Eliyahu HaNavi said, yeah. Rabbi Chiya Ubanav, the sage Rabbi Chiya and his sons. Rabbi got the secret. He declared a fast. And who are going to be the chazanim? It was going to be a little bit of a choir. It's going to be Rabbi Chiya and his sons who are going to be the shluch haitzi, where they were going to lead the tefillah. Okay, so Gemara says, they said, Mashiv haruach. And the wind began to blow. Umarad Hageshem, and their war, and the rain came down. And Shemayim, Gemara says, they were going wild. Because if they get to Mechayim Esim, that's going to be the end. So it says that they punished Eliyahu HaNavi, and they said, you go down there and you stop this. It says, I think Gemara says, he dressed up like a bear. He physically made himself like a bear, and he ran into the base medrash. He interrupted the davening. He broke their kavana, and that was the end. Apparently, they couldn't get back into it. Right? There was this one chance to do it. So the Ashariyari asks, now, why was all this happening? This is happening in the second bracha of the Shemayin Esrei, right? Atta Gibar. There's no request in Atta Gibar. And asking for anything in Atta Gibar. You're just saying Hashem's praises. So why was the praising bringing about these results? They weren't asking for anything. So the Shaira Aris says, and he says he has other proofs to this, is that what it really shows is that the more you truly believe in what Hashem can do, the more you can achieve that He'll do it. And therefore, for B'chir Banav, they have to say, Mashiv HaRuach, their belief in Hashem Mashiv HaRuach is so strong that gets the result. And that the Shayar wants to say, that's why at the end of Shemayin Esrei, at the end of each request bracha, we say, for instance, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mevarech Hashanim. That's a praise of Hashem. Why not just list the requests? Says Ashari Aira, because the praise of Hashem at the end is meant for us to strengthen our emunah and to say, yes, Hashem, you're the one who does this, because that will add to the ability to achieve what we're asking for. And therefore, you see that the level of emunah betach, the level of our faith in Hashem, the more that we have trust and faith and belief that Hashem runs everything in the world, that helps us achieve to attain what we're asking for. So I'm going to conclude with a little story. So I've mentioned this before. Now I have a nephew who, Baruch Hashem, he survived cancer twice. He had cancer in his knee. He had one of these tumors in his knee, and it came back a second time. And Baruch Hashem, he made it through both of them. He's married now. He lives in Yerushalayim. And this is my brother's son. My brother and his wife, you know, when you have a child who is going through cancer, you meet many other children who are going through cancer because you're in the same hospital and you go through the same programs. And they developed a lot of really close relationships with children. And many of these, unfortunately, there are children who didn't make it. There are many children who made it, who are married and have children. And my brother and sister, they go to the weddings and to the simchas. So my nephew has a friend. I don't know if I ever met him. Maybe I did met him, but I remember being heard. I always heard his name being mentioned. His name called him JJ. You know how many times JJ had cancer? Five times. He relapsed five times until an experimental drug helped him. He got married. He made a bris. My brother went to the bris, and he told me that that there was a yeshiva of the Thalsbolzberg yeshiva, Rav Elia Ber Vachtfeigel, one of the prominent yeshivas in America, was there. So I said, what he learned in South Wolfsburg yeshiva by Rabbi Vachtfeigel, he said, no. Just that every time JJ got sick, his mother went to Rabbi Yehuda Vachtfeigel, and she told him what happened. She asked him for a bracha. He would give her a bracha, and he would say, everything's going to be fine. So here it was. Finally, JJ got married, Baruch Hashem. He had a child. Rabbi Eliezer was there. That's why he was there. Yeah. So that's why he was there. Okay. So I said to my brother, how did Rabbi Eliezer know to say everything's going to be okay? How do you know? So I thought the answer is what he was trying to give this, what he was trying to do for JJ's mother was, he was trying to infuse her with emunah, right? Because as long as she had emunah, there was hope. If she had emunah b'tachan that her son could get well, there was hope he'd get well. So he said, everything's going to be good. Things will be good. He wanted to strengthen her emunah b'tachan, because if she has emunah b'tachan, if she has hope, then there's still hope.